Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell, and Bruce Pratt with us for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. Hello there again, Bruce.
Hello, Rich. Hello, Carrie.
Hey, it was great to have you be a part of the 10th year kickoff, the 9th anniversary show on Monday, introducing the wonderful interview with Michael Powell about Canyon Dreams.
Yeah, you know, I am. It was so hard that I decided the best thing for me to do is just limit it to books that were part of Sports Lit, not just all the interviews that I've been lucky in all the years that I've had the privilege of being on the show, being part of. What I thought about that was so enlightening was that here's a guy who was an esteemed journalist. I mean, this isn't, and it's not to disparage anybody in a smaller market. This is a New York Times journalist who goes and writes the book that, you know, you sort of wish you'd have the ability to do, that you'd figure out a way to go out and have other people tell their story and you just be the conduit. And I think that's it was a remarkable achievement.
Absolutely. All right. And you've got a very good one for us to talk about today. So, well, it's all yours.
Yeah, well, let's start with what the Bunyan Derbies were. We talked to Charlie Kasten before. We've talked about it in the past. But in 1927 and 1928, C.C. Pyle, entrepreneur and 70% huckster, decided that he would offer a $25,000 first prize, a $10,000 second prize, and $1,000 each down to number 10 for people who would run foot race from Los Angeles to New York the first year, in New York to Los Angeles the next year. Now, just to give people an idea, there were no days off. And they ran every single day. They ran across mountains, deserts. They ran across swamps. They ran across snow and hills. They averaged 44 plus miles per day for 3 months.
Wow.
They slept on cots and in tents. They were given $1.50 a day for food. Most people had to have a support system, a car following them, kinds of things you'd see today. But they did. There were two Bunyan Derbies in 1927 and then again in 1928. Now, and Pyle was a huckster, and in 28, he lost his shirt. He wasn't able to pay people off. In 27, a young man named Andy Payne from Oklahoma, part Cherokee, and very proud of that, won the race by being smart and running at about a 10-minute-per-mile pace from Los Angeles to New York. Now, this was run like the Tour de France, where each race every day was considered a stage. And the winner of the stage might get small prizes, and there were people along the way. It very complicated how everybody got there. But when they left, they had 199 people that left out of L.A., and they had fewer than 100 when they finished. One of the most interesting people in the race, there were two very interesting people in the race in 1927. One was Eddie Gardner, another was Toby Cotton Jr., two other African Americans, Samuel Robinson from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and Phil Granville, who preferred to assume that he was white. He called himself a light-skinned Jamaican Indian and was from Canada and married into an English family. And one other man were the only five African Americans in the race. Now, Pyle himself was very committed to equal and civil rights, but he ran the race through Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri, at the time Jim Crow states. Now, you think that, well, maybe a lot of the African American runners knew about this, but here's why they didn't. Eddie Gardner, who was a legendary runner in Seattle, had been born in Alabama, but his father worked in a steel mill and had the money to move the family to Seattle. Toby Cotton Jr. was part of a family that had moved from the South, Georgia, I think. Don't quote me on that, I got that wrong, to L.A. He was 15 years old, and he once ran 45 miles and waited for his parents to come pick him up. He was a phenomenally gifted young kid, but he was only 15. Robinson was a star football player, as I say, from New Jersey. And Granville was a race walker, and he thought that the smart money would be on the person who decided to walk across America at racewalk pace rather than run, because that is generally less of a strain on your body. Well, there were no doctors. If you got sick or hurt, you had to rely on the local medical people. There were times when runners were struck and hit by cars. And one of the people who was instrumental in the race was from South Africa, and he was the original record holder at 100 miles. His name was Arthur Newton, and he too was a champion of these young African American people who ran in the race. Gardner finished in 10th place the first year. Toby Cotton Jr. made it. He was 100 and something out. But the people in Harlem were so impressed with a 15-year-old kid who could run across America that they bought the family a new car for $500 and enough money for them to get back to L.A. The amount of pride in these African-American runners was stunning. I mean, the papers put up money, communities put up money. Whenever they came to a city like Chicago or St. Louis, they were treated like royalty by the better-off African-American people. But the poorest of the poor would turn out to see them because there was this notion that had been promulgated by racist Americans that black people didn't have courage, that they, you know, after they only survived slavery, that they wouldn't, you know, they'd be great at sprints, you know, they can run the short distances, but they can't run, they'll never run across America. And the funny thing is, four of the five finished the first Bunyan Derby, which is a much higher rate than for non African Americans. What Eddie Gardner went through, crossing through Jim Crow South and Southwest, was unbelievable. How he was able, with the jeers and the taunts, and I'm certainly not going to repeat the things that were said to him. He was threatened that if he came into town ahead of a white man, he'd be killed. And the first year, he was cowed by it. The second year, he sewed an American flag on his pack and basically did everything but give him the finger. And he unfortunately was injured and did not finish the second race. And Toby wasn't in it again. Granville and was in it. Robinson couldn't raise the money. But the extraordinary part of the story is how the racers bonded, and the white men were so deeply tanned from running outside all the time that people would often ask them who they were. They didn't know who the runners were. They thought they had all become one. And among the runners, there seems to have been absolutely a solidarity that we didn't see in professional sports. And this was professional. They were running for money. Professional sports in America for some time. Now, Kastner has done meticulous research on this. We know that from his first book on the Bunyan Derbies. And he's taken a look at all the people that were involved. And he has there are statistics in here in the appendices that are really pretty amazing. The way that the shortest day they ever ran was 16 miles. And the longest stage they ever ran was over 100 miles in one day. Wow. Guys had to finish by midnight. If they didn't, they would be driven to town. And if they wanted to start where they had stopped the day before, they could go back and start the next day's run with that kind of a deficit. But the number of people who finished is astonishing. These guys just didn't give up. And they knew when they were 38 hours behind with, you know, 4 days to go, that there was nothing left in it for them. But there was something in that spirit of I ran across America that motivated a lot of these guys. And one of the things, the reason I'd like to break this into two parts is I'd like to look at more specific things about Gardner next time. And Johnny Sallow, who remember as the winner, the flying Finn from Passaic, who was rewarded by the city with a job as a cop. Now, Passaic cop. And then, of course, he was sadly killed not long afterwards while he was doing crowd control at a baseball game, was hit by a pitched ball and died. But it's a remarkable story. And some of these characters, some of these people, Arthur Newton, I mean, here's a South African. That's the last place you expect to find the most enlightened white attitude towards black people. And he was great. Charlie Pyle, C.C. Pyle, at one point was in line for food, and they went to serve him ahead of Gardner. And he said, no, you serve the men in the order they come. And that was in a Jim Crow place. So there's a lot about America. There's a lot of very good stuff about America I didn't know. And a lot about these guys that I certainly didn't know. So next time someone tells me how tough somebody is, I'm going to say, yeah, run across America nonstop every day. in all weather. There was no calling it off. If it snowed, you ran through the snow. They ran through ankle-deep mud for 40 miles one day because they ran along Route 66, which at the time was not paved between Chicago and California.
Wow. And what year was this again?
That was 1927.
Wow.
And they did it again. 28, they ran from New York, which they said in a sense was even worse because they ran that time they ran through the Alleghenies and the Catoctins and the Catskills, whereas when they came east the first year they went north along the Great Lakes, so they skipped the Adirondacks. They had a day in the Catskills where they ran 74.5 miles up and down. They ran all the way up to Flagstaff from L.A., so they climbed over 7,000 feet. Guys were hit. They had fractured ribs. They kept going, and they drank tainted water, in the 28 race in Maryland and beset with the worst kind of stomach flu and stuff. Somehow these guys soldiered on, and most of them didn't drop out. They only had to run 46 miles the next day, and it was somewhat level, so they didn't think it was so bad.
Wow. All right, we look forward to hearing more about it next week on Sports Lit. Thank you, Bruce.
Oh, thank you, Rich. Thank you, Carrie.